Don't have to. You take after the Abbotts.
Then he stood up, turned off the radio, and started up the stairs. All Vivi could see was his back. All she could see was a pair of suspenders and a white shirt.
"Hurry up and get dressed," Buggy said as she stood at Vivi's bedroom door. "You have just enough time to make the train. Pete is taking you to the station."
"What about Father?" Vivi asked. "Isn't he coming? I want to tell him goodbye."
"Your father asked not to be awakened, Vivian Joan. Please, do not cause any more trouble than you already have."
"But I won't be able to see the Yayas, Mother. I can't leave without telling them goodbye. We had our goodbye all planned."
"The four of you have been saying goodbye for a week now.
The Yayas are my best friends, Mother. I have to see them."
Suddenly, as though she could not contain her rage any longer, Buggy took the pillows and bedding she'd just stripped from the bed and flung them at Vivi.
"Stop it," Buggy said, vehement, resentful. "I won't hear one more word about the all-precious Yayas. Are they all you think about?"
"Mama," Vivi said, dropping the more formal way she usually addressed her mother, "don't do this, please. They're my best friends. I can't just leave them like this."
Buggy straightened the waist of her dress, then adjusted her sweater.
"Haven't you caused enough suffering in this house? Enough is enough."
As her mother left the doorway, Vivi thought, "Enough is not enough, Mother. And it never will be." The Buick was warm when Pete opened the car door for Vivi.
"Warmed her up so you wouldn't freeze," he said. "Buggy the bitch still inside?"
"Checking on Jesse," Vivi replied. "Maybe we'll miss the train."
Pete checked his wristwatch, then went around to get in on the driver's side. He looked serious, his usual athletic swagger replaced by a heaviness. He pulled the car door tight, then turned to his sister.
"Want a smoke?"
"Yeah," Vivi said.
She watched as her brother lit two Luckies off a kitchen match, which he struck on his thumbnail.
"Sorry I'm the one that has to drive you, buddy," he said,
as he handed over a cigarette to his sister.
"Not your fault," Vivi said, taking a deep drag.
Pete picked a speck of tobacco off his tongue.
"Not your fault any of this shit is happening."
"What do you mean?" Vivi asked.
"I mean nothing you ever did deserves getting crated off to the Penguins like goddamn freight, Vivi."
Vivi tried to smile.
"Mother ever knew we called nuns penguins, she'd croak."
"Nah," Pete said. "She'd do penance for us. Shit, that woman loves doing penance."
Pete patted his jacket as though he were checking for something. Then he inspected the rearview mirror, nervous.
"She's been wanting to punish you for years."
Vivi counted the pieces of luggage that were in the back seat. She looked out at the yard, Buggy's garden almost dead in winter. The rows of Montana and clematis vines on the porch were shriveled and brown.
"What are you saying, Pete?" Vivi asked.
"Sis, I'm your bud. You know that, don't you?"
"Yeah, I know that."
"Trust me, then. Look out for Mother. She's gunning for you. Keep your elbows out."
"She is my mother," Vivi thought. "She loves me. Doesn't she?"
Pete reached over and took Vivi's hand, squeezing it tightly. He looked at her with sad eyes and shrugged his shoulders.
"Gonna miss you, Stinky."
Then pulling his hand away, he reached under his jacket and pulled out a flask.
"For the trip. Swapped expressly for you from Father's liquor cabinet."
Vivi received the flask like a sign of love. She tucked it into her purse.
"I'll carry it with me, like a friend."
As she kissed Pete on the cheek, she could see her mother in her gray coat making her way toward the car.
"I will say nothing about the smoking,"
Buggy accused her children as she positioned herself in the back seat.
"Good, Mother," Pete said. "Don't."
Once settled, Buggy began to hum softly. Vivi thought the tune sounded like Salve Regina. Pete began to whistle, to drown out the sound. As they rode, Vivi pulled down the vanity mirror as if to see if there was something in her eye. But it was not her own face she wanted to see. She wanted to see the face of her mother as she sat silent in the back seat. Vivi did not know what she was looking for, but she thought that if the right expression passed over her mother's face, then she would know the right thing to say, the right thing to do, the right way to be in order to sidestep this banishment.
I want to tell her to shut up her crazy humming, Vivi thought. I want to bash her in the head with one of my suitcases. I want to truss her up with ropes like a cow and drop her in a ditch on the side of the road. Then seize the wheel myself, whip this car around, blast the horn up and down the streets of my town, declaring my freedom from that woman in the back seat who thinks she's a modern martyr.
But Vivi could not move. She was too sad. It required all the strength she had to ask,
"Can we just stop by Caro's? They wake up early. Or could we swing by Teensy's real quick? It's on the way. Sometimes Genevieve reads all night long when she can't sleep."
"You do not barge into someone's house at this time of day," Buggy said. "Your father gave specific instructions that we were to go straight to the station."
"You are lying," Vivi longed to say, but she could not.
To say it out loud would be to admit her mother's cruelty. Vivi glanced down at her gold Gruen wristwatch with its green dots glowing with poison. 4:15 in the morning. Nothing will ever be the same. She studied her mother sitting in the high, rounded back seat of the Buick, fingering her rosary beads.
"She is lying through her teeth," Vivi thought. "She is lying, and she is happy. Why is she so serene?"
It was still dark when they reached the train station at Jefferson and 8th Streets. Pete climbed out of the car and went around to open Vivi's door. As she stood on the curb by the car, Vivi could see her breath in the early morning air. Watching as Pete ferried her luggage into the lobby, she pressed her purse to her side and thought of the flask of bourbon. The anticipation of its comfort kept her from crumbling to the ground. Rolling down the window, Buggy said,
"Aren't you going to tell me goodbye?"
"Goodbye," Vivi said.
Then Buggy opened the back door. She turned her body slightly, as though she might climb out of the car and go to her daughter. Vivi longed to run to her mother and bury her head in Buggy's lap. She longed to hold on to her mother and not let go. Leaning into the car, touching her mother's hand, she asked,
"Mama, what are you praying for?"
Buggy placed her hand on Vivi's cheek. In a gentle voice, she said,
"I'm praying for you, Vivi Ann. I'm praying for you because you've run out of grace."
Then Pete's hand was under Vivi's elbow, pulling her upright, all but tucking her under his shoulder.
"Ma," he said, "get the hell off my sister's back."
Then he slammed the car door, leaving his mother in the back seat with her rosary. Inside, the lobby was empty except for 4 sleeping soldiers, their feet propped on duffel bags. The sight of them made Vivi think of Jack. After buying her ticket, she and Pete sat on one of the long wooden benches. Vivi tried to imagine she was in a movie. "The beautiful young girl misses her lover," she thought. The camera comes closer. She sits in a train station with her brother, waiting for the war to end. Heartsick and lonely, she reaches for the only comfort she has. Checking the door to make sure her mother had not decided to come in, Vivi took out the flask and offered it to Pete.
"You first, buddy-o," he said,
and Vivi took a swig. The bourbon went down smoothly. She waited a moment, then took another swig, feeling the warmth spread through her body, associating the taste of the whiskey with good times, with being desired, with what little she knew about sex. At her third sip, Vivi was wishing she had yet another flask, no, a bottle or two, tucked into her luggage. She passed the flask to Pete, who took a sip and handed it back to her.
"Give me your hand," he said.
Vivi put out her palm. Into it, Pete slapped a compact, weighty little object. Vivi looked down to see his pocket knife, a prized possession of his she'd always admired. She could feel the knife's red and silver heft. She held it to her nose and smelled the handle. It smelled like Pete. It smelled like boy.
A buddy should never be without a pocket knife, Vivo. It can get you out of all kind of jams. If one of those penguins sits on you, stick her in the butt tukus with your pocket knife and run like hell.
Vivi tried to smile. Thanks, Pedo. Then, with the time she had left, Vivi carved her name into the wooden bench where they sat.
V-I-V-I-A-B-B-O-T-T, she gouged into the wood. The Vivi Abbott Memorial Bench, Pete said.
Now nobody can forget me, Vivi said. Pete boarded the train with her, carrying her train case. When Vivi was settled into her seat, he gave her a rough hug.
Love you, Stinky, he said.
Love you, Pete.
Pete turned to the black porter who was squeezing by at that moment.
Y'all take care of my little sister, you hear? You're traveling with precious cargo. Yowza, the porter said, giving Vivi a smile.
After Pete climbed down from the train, Vivi reached for the flask, took two swallows of bourbon, then began to cry. Vivianne Joan Abbott, age 16, sat on the Southern Crescent, wearing a baby blue Angora sweater over a cream-colored pleated skirt. She pulled her navy wool coat with the lovely fox collar tight around her body. She tried to believe that her own arms were Jack's holding her close. She tried hard to believe that everyone adored her.
January 26, 1943. Dear Carol, every single girl at this school is ugly. I do not mean plain. I do not mean homely. I mean ugly. This is one of those schools where there are two types of girls. One, the daughters of Catholic nuts. And two, bad girls who they want to punish. I guess I fit in both categories. They're all ugly, and they stink. The whole joint reeks like sauerkraut and old man's socks. The odor alone is enough penance for 84,000 mortal sins. Obey the church, confess your sins, and die. That's the plan. It all comes down from the Mother Superior, the Boris Karloff of the nun world. My room here is not a room. It's not even a cubbyhole. It's a pen, a hole, a cell. It has a cot, a chair, and a water basin on top of a small chest of drawers. Hooks on the wall. No closet. I asked the nun who brought me here where my closet was. She said, "You have no closet." Like I had asked for a suite at the Grand Hotel. "I need to hang my dresses," I said, pointing to my suitcases and footlocker. She looked at me like I had a hair lip. "That luggage is your cross to bear," she said. Carol, I do not know whether I am in purgatory or just plain hell. Love, Vivi.
It took Vivi a week at St. Augustine's to realize the girls hated her. It took her a week and a half to realize the nuns did too. She tried smiling at first, but it was a waste of face muscles. Nobody, not one person, would smile back. They looked her up and down and whispered malicious things she couldn't quite make out. Vivi's hair was too blonde for them, her eyes too bright, her language too jazzy, and above all, they hated the clothes she'd brought. She tried, but Vivi could not locate any other bad girls to become buddies with. The hallways smelled like oatmeal with Lysol stirred in. The very air made Vivi cringe. Vivi lived by her sense of smell. She could tell when people were scared or if they had eaten peaches, just by their scent. She could sniff and tell whether a person had gotten enough sleep the night before by breathing them in. She could smell the scent of tuberoses in a person's hair days after they had been near those flowers. There weren't any tuberoses at St. Augustine's. Sister Furman, who taught religion, delighted in introducing lessons by looking at Vivi and saying, "For those of you girls who have been sent here because of sinful behavior, pay special attention. You do not deserve God's love after the pain you have caused your families. But if you study hard and keep ever present in your heart the shame you carry,
In time, you may be welcomed back into the light of God the Father's love.
Then the other girls would turn around and gawk at Vivi, like she was a child murderer or a Nazi.
Vivi wanted to tell them all to go straight to hell, but it was not worth the effort.
Vivi set her footlocker up in her cell, and on top of it she placed the photograph of Jack and her at the Thornton High Mardi Gras ball. Next to that, she arranged photos of the Yayas at Spring Creek and at the Gulf Coast. The little basket of dried rose petals from the roses Jack sent her the day he left for boot camp sat in front of the picture of her family.
Lifting her blue velvet birthday gown from the trunk, she pinned it up on the wall of her cell, where it bloomed like a huge flower above the crucifix that was standard issue in every St. Augustine room. She had to have something colorful in there, or she would die.
When she came back to her cell, after the chalk dust and freezing cold classrooms and the cafeteria that smelled like green peas covered in mold, Vivi took little nips from Pete's flask and stared at that wall, trying to make a party. Thank God she'd snuck Delia's feather pillow from home. They do not sleep on pillows here. Pillows are against the rules. This scared Vivi more than the puke green color all the walls were painted. Every morning she woke in that penitentiary, she had to actually hide her pillow so the proctor nun would not take it away from her.
Screw them, Vivi prayed. Screw them and the horse they rode in on. Don't let them get me. I am Vivi Abbott. I am a member of the Royal Tribe of Yayas. I am a cheerleader. I am going to play at Wimbledon someday. I have a perfectly wonderful boy who loves me. Where I come from, I am popular. Holy Mother, full of gracious virtues, patient and well-taught, give me strength against my enemies. Make these headaches go away. Send me a touch, smoke, a kiss, a hug. Help me not to shrivel up and die.
March 1st, 1943. Dear Caro, Teensy, and Niecy, it's been 5 weeks and 3 days. I am entombed here. I cannot breathe. They wake us up by pounding on the door of our cell at 5 in the morning. I am supposed to splash cold water on my face, take off my gown, put on my gray, scratchy wool uniform, pull on the gray knee socks and the Oxfords, tie my chapel veil on my head, and walk straight to the chapel without saying a word. A priest with bulging eyes says Mass and hears confession. No singing, no music, no dancing at all. This is the longest I have gone without dancing since I was born. Even Mother never minded our dancing. When I take communion, the host sticks to the roof of my dry mouth. They only allow you to use 2 squares of toilet paper in this place because waste is a sin. They monitor you in the john. There are girls here who beg to be bathroom monitors. They think it is something great, like being elected class president. That's how sick this place is. No such thing as a bath here, only showers that feel like someone's spitting on you. No yayas, no Jack. I would commit murder for the cafe au lait that Shirley brings us in bed at Teensy's, in the big bowls, sweetened with honey. I would commit double murder to see the 3 of you and Jack. No one laughs here. I am parched. I am drying up. Please ask Pete to talk to Father about me. I've written to Mother but have received no response. I shouldn't complain like this with the war going on. I don't know why they want me so miserable. Your Vivi. P.S. Get your hands on Hooch and send it soon.
Then she wrote her mother a variation of the same letter she had written several times since she arrived at St. Augustine's.
March 1st, 1943. Dear Mother, please forgive me. I am not sure what I have done wrong, but I am sorry. I never meant to hurt you. If you let me come home, I will not disappoint you. Please, Mother, please let me come home. I miss you. I miss everyone so very much. Love, Vivi.
After she'd been at St. Augustine's a little over a month, food began to repulse Vivi. Everything tasted too salty. For 4 days straight, she became nauseated after eating the oatmeal served at breakfast, and after that, she simply sat and pushed the oats around in the stained bowl. She sipped her juice and pushed the oats around. At lunch, the soup was as salty as the oatmeal, so she stopped eating that as well. In the evenings, the limp cabbage smelled like her baby sister Jezzy's diapers. The only food Vivi ate with relish was the apple they were given with supper. She took it back to her cubicle, opened the window, and set the fruit on the windowsill until it grew chilled with the night air. Then she took out Pete's pocket knife and divided the fruit into tiny slivers, placing them in her mouth one at a time. She'd have given anything for a full flask of bourbon. After she ate the apple, Vivi lay on the hard bed with the core of the apple on Delia's feather pillow next to her head so she could smell it while she slept. She ached for her girlfriends, for Jack, Genevieve, Cokes and po'boys, and Gene Krupa drum solos. She missed the sweet strains of Harry James and talking every day with the yayas and lying next to them on the rug in front of the fireplace or out on the porch. She missed attention and music and laughter and gossip. She missed playing cards with Pete in the kitchen at night. She even missed her mother and father. She missed home so deeply that she finally began to give up. She stopped writing letters, and when letters came, she dreaded reading them because they reminded her of what she was missing. The war news only made her sadder, made her worry about Jack. She felt like she was slipping away, but trying to hold on wore her out. As the weeks passed, she grew exhausted just walking up a flight of stairs. One afternoon in April, she received the only letter her mother wrote her at St. Augustine's. It read,
April 24th, 1943. Dear Joan, I am glad to hear they now call you by your saint's name. It was your father and Delia who named you Vivian, not me. Mother Superior wrote me about her session with you last week. Because she is concerned with your spiritual welfare, she has decided it is God's will that from this day forward you will be known only by your saint name, Joan. The other girls have been instructed to use only that name. You will only answer to Joan. Any mail sent to Vivi Ann or Vivi will be returned, unopened, to the sender. It is hoped that by invoking the name of Joan of Arc, you may be more successful in battling the demon that plagues your soul. Mother Superior also reported how you defied her, how you tried to joke and say you were relieved your saint name was not Hedwig. She also told me that you referred to her as a warthog. I can only say that I agree wholeheartedly with Mother Superior that public school has damaged your respect for sanctity and for authority. You are in grave need of discipline. No, I cannot let you come home. You will get used to St. Augustine's. It will simply take time. You must offer up any discomforts to our Holy Savior who died for our sins. You wrote that you are sorry for hurting me. You need to understand that nothing you do can hurt me. It is the Blessed Virgin and the baby Jesus who you hurt. They are the ones you should get down on your knees to and beg forgiveness from. May the Lord our God bless you, and may the Virgin Mary guide you in everything you do. Love, Mother.
That afternoon, Vivi fainted during gym class. Her legs buckled underneath her, and she drifted to the ground, her knees hitting the old varnished floor. It felt almost pleasant to simply let go like that. The nun who taught physical education was terse, businesslike about the event, seeming almost to blame Vivi for such weakness. Vivi was allowed to return to her room for the rest of the day, where she plunged into a feverish sleep.
When she woke, she was sweating so profusely that her sheets were wet against her skin. The headache that had been circling for weeks settled in like a conquering enemy. She tried to get out of bed, but the room and its sparse furnishings were reeling. She could not make anything stay solid or still, not inside or out. Alternating waves of hot and cold washed over her, and she knew she needed to get herself to the bathroom. Vivi forced herself to get out of the bed, but her legs would not hold. Remaining on her knees, she crawled to the door. Shaking violently, she tried once again to stand. This time her legs stayed under her, but she could not get her equilibrium. She felt as though some central ball bearing inside her that made balance possible had been knocked loose. Vivi slowly made her way down the hall by leaning against the wall, the doorknobs to the other girls' rooms jabbing into her side. It took all she had to make it to the bathroom stall. Never had she been this sick before. Kneeling with her head over the commode, she was so violently ill that the contractions sent pain into her neck and back. Her head throbbed so that she no longer saw shapes, only patches of gray and black. She felt as if she were being turned inside out, as if she were being scoured. At some point, the stall door opened, and Vivi almost cried with relief. "Someone is coming to help me," she thought. "Someone kind is coming to pull my hair out of my face and lay a cool cloth on my forehead like Mother does when I'm sick."
"You have been in there for too long," the boy said. "I'm going to report you to Mother Superior for being wasteful with toilet paper, Joan Abbott."
Vivi lay on the floor and could not respond. When she first began to stir, it was to the sound of tree branches scratching lightly against a window. It sounded like her bedroom at home, and the belief that she was back in her own bed rushed through her sore body. For an instant, Vivi felt like laughing out loud. The bed was soft, and she lay back on not one but two pillows. For some reason, she felt utterly convinced that if she didn't jump up immediately, she'd be late for a tennis game with Caro. When she opened her eyes, Vivi expected to see the armoire and dresser that sat in her bedroom at home. She expected to see the chintz curtains with the roses and green trailing leaves. Instead, what she glimpsed was a white curtain stretched along one side of the bed in which she found herself. On the other side was a bank of windows with shutters closed tight. For a moment, she felt dazed, and then it struck her. She was not at home at all. She did not know where she was, but she knew it wasn't home. She began to cry until tears soaked her face, her hair, her gown. She did not remember putting on the gown she wore, did not recognize it. She needed terribly to blow her nose, but she did not have a handkerchief. She could not bear the thought, but she decided she was going to have to blow her nose on the sheets. "God," she sighed, "I do not want to lie in a bed of snot. I want to die. I want to fall back asleep and never wake up." Then the white curtain that ran alongside the bed was pulled back, and Vivi looked up to see a round, smiling face, young and almost pretty. A pair of rimless glasses sat on a small, upturned nose. The gray-blue eyes were slightly almond-shaped, with the lightest lashes and brows. Around the edges of the veil, Vivi thought she could see a light dusting of the same light hair. "How are you feeling, Vivienne Joan?" the nun asked, smiling. It was the first time anyone had called her by her real name in over a month. It was the first smile anyone had given her since the porter, when she'd got off the train.
"Are you a St. Augustine's nun?" Vivi asked, her voice hoarse.
Her habit and veil were different from the rest of the sisters at the school, and the fact that she was smiling was something of a shock. "I'm from a different order, a nursing order," the nun replied. "My name is Sister Solange."
A French name, Vivi thought.
The small interaction had already tired her. She closed her eyes. "Are you ready for a little nourishment?" Sister Solange asked. The nun's kind voice astounded Vivi. It has been so long since anyone treated me with kindness. In my old life, I had so much kindness. I took it for granted, like sugar before the war. Trying to hold back tears, Vivi sniffled loudly. Forgive me, please, Sister Solange said. The first thing you need is a clean handkerchief. The nun disappeared for a moment, and when she returned, it was with two white cotton handkerchiefs that had been pressed and neatly folded. She placed them on the bed next to Vivi's right hand. Vivi grasped a handkerchief and brought it to her nose. It smelled just laundered, with a lingering smell of flowers. It was the first lovely fragrance she had smelled since she left home. Slowly, she unfolded it and wiped her eyes. Then she wiped her face and blew her nose. She started to reach for the second one, but pulled her hand back as though afraid.
May I use the second one, sister? Vivi asked cautiously.
Of course you may, the nun said. Perhaps you need a whole stack of handkerchiefs. When Sister Solange disappeared again, Vivi did her best to clean her face. Her skin felt sticky, unattractive. She could feel the residue of old tears, along with the wetness of new ones. Back at her side, Sister Solange placed a stack of freshly laundered handkerchiefs on the bed. There was a time when such a gesture would have gone unnoticed by Vivi, but the presence of those cotton cloths folded at her side, ready for her to use, seemed so extravagant that her first instinct was to hide them before they were snatched away. As the nun turned away from the bed again, Vivi thought,
she does not hate me.
When she returned this time, Sister Solange carried a large white bowl filled with hot water. Setting it on the table beside the bed, she dipped in a washcloth, wrung it out, and then leaned over Vivi. Close your eyes, please, the nun said. Then she laid the warm, wet cloth over Vivi's eyes. Vivi took a deep breath that filled her whole body. She could feel the warmth entering the space behind her eyes. She could feel the kindness entering the bruised space around her heart. She drifted back to sleep. When she woke again, Sister Solange stood next to her bearing a tray of food. The plain, pleasing smell of potatoes, carrots, and onions cooked in a clear soup wafted up to Vivi's nose. When she looked into the steaming bowl, Vivi could see the orange color of carrots and the green of celery. A hunk of homemade bread lay on a plate next to the soup, and next to that was a small glass of apple juice. Here you are, Sister Solange said. Your first infirmary meal. The nun did not order Vivi to eat. Rather, she set the tray down on the table where Vivi could regard it warily. She slowly sat up and allowed the nun to place the tray in front of her. Staring at the bowl, she almost gagged at the memory of the saltiness of St. Augustine food. Slowly, Vivi brought the spoon to her lips. What she tasted was clean and good. The old familiar taste of cooked potatoes and onions and the almost sweet flavor of cooked carrots soothed her. Vivi ate almost half the bowl of soup before she stopped, exhausted. Sister Solange removed the tray and then, like magic, pulled out of her pocket three apples. Setting them on the bedside table, she said, "In case you become hungry later." Vivi floated back into another deep sleep, and when she woke again, she had no idea how long it had been. Sleepily, she spotted the three apples as they sat on the table next to her. In her haze, she imagined that the apples were watching her, calling her up out of her dark slumber. Sister Solange appeared again, and Vivi wondered if she had been sitting just on the other side of the curtain the whole time she had been sleeping. "Good morning, Vivienne Jones," she said. "May I show you to the bathroom?"
"Yes, sister," Vivi said.
As she sat up and swung her legs down out of the bed, the dizziness returned, and Vivi lost her balance. Catching her, Sister Solange placed an arm around Vivi's waist and leaned the girl against her. Slowly, she led Vivi to a bathroom, which was not a series of stalls, as in the dorm, but a real room with a door that closed. "I will be just outside if you need help," Sister Solange said as she pulled the door shut. When Vivi finished, she tried to stand up but grew dizzy and sat back down immediately. "Sister?" she called softly, but she got no response. Maybe the nun had left her alone to be dizzy and sick and attacked by another bathroom monitor. This time she would curl up in a ball and die. "Sister," Vivi called out once more, a little louder, "will you help me, please?" The door opened, and Sister Solange stepped forward, keeping her eyes down so that she did not embarrass Vivi. Putting her arm around the girl, the nun led her gently back down the hall. "You are weak as a kitten, Vivianne Joan," the nun said, "weak as one of God's little kittens." Vivi thought she could detect the faintest scent of lavender about Sister Solange. "That's what it is," Vivi decided. "Lavender. That's what the handkerchiefs smell like, too. How could that be? I haven't seen any lavender bushes growing at St. Augustine's." Vivi loved smelling Sister Solange. It was a tiny pleasure that made her feel so grateful. "Do you think you might be ready for a bath?" Sister Solange asked when they got back to Vivi's bed. "A bath," Vivi thought. "Our Lady of Mercy, a bath. Do you mean a real bath or a shower?" "A real bath," the nun said. "That's all we have here in the infirmary. One old bathtub." The very word bath sounded beautiful, almost too luxurious to bear. "Yes, sister," Vivi said. "Yes, I think I'm ready for a bath." "Very good," she said. "We'll make an agreement then. You eat a meal, I mean a sizable portion of a real meal, and then you will have a real bath." "This nun is bargaining with me," Vivi thought. "I have never had anybody bribe me with a bath to make me eat." Slowly, chewing every bite, Vivi Abbott ate almost all of a baked potato. Her 16-year-old body, long unstroked, long unheld, craved the sensation of hot water against her naked skin, of steam rising, of her body sinking back into the arms of another element. There was almost nothing she would not do to earn such an indulgence. Sister Solange left her alone in the tub for a moment while she left to get towels. Vivi lay back in the water, letting her head submerge, feeling the warm water cover her chin, then her nose, then her forehead. When she came up for air, she felt cold, naked. So she let herself slip back under the water. She lay back like the yayas would do at Spring Creek when the sun went down, casting swimsuits aside to bathe with ivory soap, creek water flowing between their legs. Vivi went underwater to another world. She could see light filtering in from the high casement windows. She could hear nothing. She thought she would just stay down there. No reason to rush back up. Just sink back down into a liquid life with no sharp edges. Glorious. "Vivianne Joan?" the nun called out loudly, leaning down over the tub. Vivi emerged. She resented being called back to the surface. "What?" she said sharply. "I've brought you a surprise," the nun replied. "A surprise?" Vivi repeated, unbelieving. She had had enough surprises. "Indeed," Sister Solange said, "only you mustn't tell anybody. This must be our secret."
"Yes, sister," Vivi said, interested, in spite of herself. From the folds of her gown, Sister Solange pulled out a small cheesecloth sack about the size of a ripe fig. "Voila," she said, and plopped the little sack into Vivi's bath.
"What is it?" Vivi asked, amazed.
"Close your eyes and breathe in," the nun said. Vivi took a long, slow breath. As she did, the fragrance of lavender rose up and met her nose, joining with the steam from the bathwater.
"Lavender in my bathwater. How divine," Vivi thought.
This person knows who I am. Lavender was all she could say. Oh, my.
I grow it, Sister Solange confided as she sat down on a stool near the tub. I have 3 fat lavender bushes growing back behind the laundry.
Why can't I tell anybody? Vivi asked.
Well, the nun said, all God's children have different ideas about healing. The other sisters might think I was being old-fashioned or indulgent.
This Sister Solange is full of surprises, Vivi thought. Every time I want to go under, she pulls something else out of her cloak.
Well, thank you, Vivi said. I love lavender. Indeed, Sister Solange nodded. I saw the way you smelled the handkerchiefs. A little smile crept over Vivi's face.
Well, Vivian Joan, Sister Solange said, her mouth wide open in mock surprise. That is the first smile you have given me in 3 days.
3 days? Vivi asked. I've been here 3 days?
3 going on 4, the nun replied. You were brought to me late Friday afternoon. This is Tuesday morning. You have been my only patient for the past week. Sometimes it gets slow around here. But I expect business will pick up in a couple of weeks when the next rash of colds goes around.
Sister Solange shifted the stack of fresh towels in her lap.
Aren't you embarrassed, sister? Vivi asked. I mean, with me naked?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Sister Solange said, rolling back the sleeves of her habit. Why should I be embarrassed? I am a nurse, Vivian Joan. I have seen people's naked bodies, boys, girls, men, women of all shapes. All of them God's creatures. The soul needs the body. It is nothing to be ashamed of.
Vivi closed her eyes again. This nun was not what Vivi had expected.
Besides, Sister Solange said, I come from a family of 5 sisters. We always bathed together when I was young.
5? Vivi asked. I only have 1 sister. She's really little. But I have 3 best friends. They're like my sisters.
I bet you have a lot of friends, Vivian, Sister Solange said, standing. It's probably best if you don't stay in there too terribly long. You don't want to end up a stewed prune. Besides, you're still weak.
Want to climb out now?
I'm fine to get out by myself, Vivi said.
She was not too thrilled at the thought of anyone, even a nun, seeing her body at this point. She was embarrassed at how skinny she was.
No, Vivian Jones, Sister Solange said, firm. I am responsible for you. You will let me help you.
Giving up, Vivi allowed Sister Solange to help her out of the tub. Steadying her, the nun helped Vivi pat herself dry, and soon Vivi was dressed in a plain, clean gown. Exhausted, she slept for the rest of the day, waking only when the nun brought her a bit of rice and vegetables for supper. Vivi ate a small portion of it, and then ate an apple in large bites rather than her customary small slivers. That night, she dreamed she saw her mother's face. Buggy was leaning close enough for Vivi to touch her cheek, but Buggy did not see Vivi. She looked straight past her daughter, like she was searching for something she had lost.
Mama, Vivi called out in her sleep. It's me. Mama, look. Mama.
Vivi twisted in the sheets, sweating and crying. Trembling, her body jerked sharply when Sister Solange turned on the light, but she was still not fully awake. The nun wore a white cotton gown, and her head was unveiled. Her hair, closely cropped and blonde, resembled a scruffy canary, and she had about her an unself-conscious beauty and grace.
Vivian Joan, she said, putting her hand on the girl's forehead. Blessed child.
The words were spoken with great compassion, and they helped Vivi wake from the nightmare. But it was her mother's voice she wanted, no one else's.
What is troubling you? The nun whispered.
I want to go home, Vivi said. I want my mother.
The next afternoon, Vivi woke from a nap to hear Mother Superior's voice. She opened her eyes and began counting the strips of light that fell through the shutters that she had opened slightly. It was around noon.
She could tell by the quality of light. A short while later, Sister Solange helped Vivi get out of bed and get dressed. She slipped a lavender sachet into Vivi's hand and curled her hand over Vivi's when she said goodbye. She did not want to let her go. Sister Solange has taken a vow of obedience, Vivi told herself. That is why she is doing this. That is why she is seeing me to the door. That is why she is making me leave her. At Mother Superior's instruction, Vivi went immediately back to her classes that afternoon. Afterward, she skipped supper and lay on the bed in her dorm room. She held the sachet in her hand. The halls were quiet, with the other girls away at supper. Vivi felt like she was on a huge ship, alone. After she slipped out of her gray wool school uniform, Vivi took down her blue velvet gown from the wall. She longed for a mirror, but there were none at St. Augustine's. Reaching into her trunk, she lifted out the silver compact, a gift from Genevieve before she left. A single rose was engraved on the lid, and inside the powder smelled sweet, like Genevieve's dressing room. Opening the compact, Vivi looked at her face. She studied her eyes, her nose, her mouth. She longed to see her whole body reflected. She pulled the straight-back chair on top of the cot. Holding her dress, she climbed up onto the chair in front of the high window. Darkness had fallen, and with the light on in her room, Vivi could see her naked body mirrored in the windowpane. She pulled the dress over her head, strapless, with tiny hooks that fastened up the side. The dress was now far too big for Vivi's emaciated body. Jack could not keep his hands off me in this dress, she thought. He would rub the velvet lightly when we danced. His tender touch made me shiver with excitement. Letting the dress fall, Vivi looked at her breasts reflected in the window. She cupped her hands under her bosoms. Then she dropped her hands to her sides and stared at her own image until the room started spinning. Climbing down carefully from the chair, Vivi put it back in its place and turned off the light. Then she opened the windows wide and lay down on top of the wool blanket that covered the cot. It scratched her back. She could feel her eye sockets burning. She wished she had some bourbon. Soon, she fell into a deep sleep. She dreamed of Jack lying next to her on a pink and white checkered blanket at Spring Creek. They were holding hands, staring into a bonfire. In the dream, she was achingly hungry for the kind of food they usually cooked out at the creek. Suddenly, the flames of the bonfire leapt toward the two of them, flames hot and furious, ready to devour them. When she reached for Jack, he was already on fire. She woke, screaming, the smell of burning fabric assaulting her nostrils. It took a moment before she realized the flames at the foot of her bed were real. Her midnight blue velvet dress was on fire, and the flames had leapt to the sheets. Vivi flew from the bed, careening in dizziness and fear. She clutched Delia's pillow tightly to her chest, but her feet felt shackled to the floor. She could not make herself move. As the fire crept further up the bedclothes, Vivi could not take her eyes off her party dress, now being released from its solid material into air. She watched the flames in horror, but the warmth felt good against her naked body. She felt like she was witnessing a demonic, lovely ballet. Although she didn't see or hear anyone in the room with her, it felt like a pair of strong hands grabbed her from behind and pulled her out of the room. The next thing she knew, she was standing alone in the cold, dark hallway, naked. The door to the burning bed was closed. She heard the sound of feet running down the hall and a door slamming. She heard her own breathing. She began to scream, and she did not stop. Not when the other students ran into the hall to see what was wrong. Not when a flock of nuns arrived in a panic. Not after the fire was put out. Not when Mother Superior threw a blanket over Vivi's bare body, saying, "Cover your naked self." They have incinerated my birthday dress, Vivi thought. They want to burn me alive. Jerking Vivi by the arm, Mother Superior shoved her into her office.
Once inside, she took Vivi by the shoulders and shook her. The wool blanket scratched Vivi's skin. Every part of her body itched.
"Stop shrieking this moment," Mother Superior said. "Get control of yourself, Joan."
Terrified, Mother Superior slapped Vivi across the face. She was determined to get the girl under control in the only way she knew how. But Vivi could not stop screaming. Sister Solange arrived in Mother Superior's office without her veil, her hooded cloak hastily thrown over her nightgown. Ignoring her superior's frown, she crossed to Vivi and took the girl in her arms.
"You must see to the student,"
Mother Superior said, the light from the desk lamp reflecting in her glasses.
"The girl is seriously disturbed."
Behind Mother Superior's desk was a painting of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, bleeding. A crucifix hung to the right. Under the crucifix was the phrase, "The Immaculate Victim."
"Of course she's upset, Mother," Sister Solange said. "Her bed was set on fire with her in it."
Mother Superior rubbed her fingers against the rosary beads that hung at her waist. "Joan could have set the fire herself. We will have to look into it." Vivi half heard their conversation. She had stopped screaming and now could only shake. Nuns came and went out of the room, but she could not follow it all. There was discussion about calling in Father O'Donagan, the priest who came to say Mass and hear confessions at the academy.
"Mother,"
Sister Solange said, "do you think it might be prudent to call her parents?"
"I do not think it wise to worry her parents about this," Mother Superior said. "This is better handled here at St. Augustine's."
"With all respect," Sister Solange said, "as a nurse, I think it advisable to contact her family. Vivian Joan has been ill, and the shock of the fire may have her more troubled than we realize."
"Sister Solange," Mother Superior said, "I have made up my mind. Her parents will not be called."
"Yes, Mother," Sister Solange said, looking from Vivi to the image of the bleeding heart, then down at the floor. Her vow of obedience was a sacred one. Sister Solange said, "Perhaps Mother might agree to letting Vivi spend the night in the infirmary so that I might observe her medically." Mother Superior crossed back behind her desk, folding her hands into the sleeves of her gown.
"It is agreed. You may have the girl tonight."
Then, raising the small crucifix of her rosary, Mother Superior kissed it.
"Now, we have all had quite enough excitement for one night. It is time to return to bed. Pray, sisters, for the soul of this daughter of Mary."
"They only pray for your soul around here," Vivi thought. "Your body could burn up for all they care."
At the infirmary, Sister Solange dressed Vivi in a long, oversized flannel gown. The sleeves were full and poofy and sat like clouds over her skinny arms. She arranged a cotton throw over Vivi's shoulders and placed a hot water bottle at her feet and one in her lap. Together, they sat in the small infirmary office, their chairs almost touching. A vase of roses sat on the desk, and to either side there were glass-fronted cabinets containing various pills and tonics. On the desk, the nun had placed a cup of tea and a small plate of ginger cookies. She observed Vivi closely.
"Please have some, Vivi and Joan."
When Vivi raised the cup to her mouth, her hands shook so that she spilled tea onto her gown. She did not seem to notice. She stared at a few tiny yellow-gold chamomile flowers that floated in the cup. After Vivi took a sip, Sister Solange said, "Good. Now have a cookie, please." Sister watched Vivi as she stared at the cookie without taking a bite.
"Now you must talk to me, Vivian."
Hearing her true name caught Vivi the way sun unexpectedly glinting off a buckle or a piece of tinfoil might catch the eye. She looked at the nun, unsure.
"What name do they call you at home?" Sister Solange asked.
Vivi thought the nun looked tired. She stared at the nun's blonde hair and looked down at Sister's hands. The nun was squeezing her fingers tightly together and then releasing them. When Sister saw Vivi notice this, she folded her hands underneath her cloak.
"At home," Vivi said. "At home, they call me Vivi."
"Vivi," Sister Solange repeated. "What a lively name." The nun lowered her head for a moment, in prayer or deliberation. When she lifted it, her eyes looked even more tired.
"Vivi, I want you to try to pay attention to what I'm saying, please.
Vivi was listening to the tones of Sister Solange's voice. It was a mossy, quiet sound, the perfect green-blue. The nun took Vivi's hands in hers. She watched Vivi closely. "Vivi," Sister Solange said, "squeeze my hand." Vivi looked up at Sister Solange, but she did not appear to have heard her. She began to shake violently. The nun took the teacup from the girl's hands. She did not want Vivi to hurt herself. Sister Solange stood, took out a key from her desk, and opened one of the cabinets against the wall. She chose a bottle of tablets and shook two of them into her palm. "Will you swallow these, please, Vivi?" she said. She had wondered earlier if the girl needed something stronger than tea to help her shock, but she dared not suggest it to Mother Superior. But Vivi was in her office now. Vivi swallowed the pills as she was told. The nun knelt back down at Vivi's side. "Vivi," she said softly, "tell me who I can call at home to come and help you." At first, Vivi thought she might have dreamed the words. So many times in the past 4 months she had imagined someone saying these very words to her. She studied the nun's face. Was this some kind of trick? Was she about to be trapped and then punished? Sister Solange waited patiently for a response. Slowly she lifted her hand and placed her palm tenderly against Vivi's cheek. "Vivi, dear, tell me who to call." The touch of Sister Solange's hand against her skin revived Vivi.
"Call Genevieve Whitman at Highland 4270 in Thornton, Louisiana," she said. "Don't talk to Mr. Whitman, only talk to Genevieve."
"Is she a relative?" the nun asked. Terrified that the nun might not call, Vivi lied and said,
"Yes, she is my godmother."
"Thank you, Vivi," the nun said. "You are a dear girl, a blessed girl." Vivi slept again that night in her old infirmary bed. She dreamed that she and Teensy and Jack were sitting on the seawall at Biloxi, the sun caressing their faces. The next day, Sister Solange helped Vivi dress in an outfit that she scrounged together with bits and pieces from the lost and found. The ensemble was mismatched, ugly, and scratchy, and the nun apologized as she handed the items to Vivi. "These garments are those of a match girl," she said laughing, "not a tennis player." Vivi buttoned an off-white blouse with stains under the arms. Over that, she pulled a nondescript brown jumper that hung loosely on her thin frame. Wool socks and a pair of uniform Oxfords were on her feet.
"How did you know I was a tennis player?" Vivi asked Sister Solange.
"Oh," the nun said, "you spoke of tennis many times in your sleep. Tennis and someone named Jack Yaya." Vivi gave a tentative laugh that turned into a cough. "Anyway," Sister Solange said, "there is no reason for such a pretty girl to look like a penitent. But this clothing is the best I can do."
"What about my own clothes?" Vivi asked.
The nun bit her lip before she spoke. "Vivi, they are all too damaged."
"All of them?"
Vivi asked. "Yes," the nun said. "What wasn't burned was ruined by smoke."
"Except my pillow," Vivi said.
"Except your pillow," Sister Solange replied. "Your pillow survived, and so will you." The sight of Genevieve and Teensy standing in Mother Superior's office was almost more than Vivi could bear. She longed to run to them, to hold them and smell them, to soak in all of the life that they carried. But she could not make herself take a step forward. She stood frozen, clutching Delia's feather pillow in her hand, looking far younger than her 16 years. Rushing to her side, Teensy and Genevieve enveloped Vivi in hugs. The suddenness of it disoriented Vivi, and she could not respond. She felt as though they were onlookers, and she was a wreck on the side of the road.
"Mrs. Whitman," Mother Superior said, "I cannot release this child to you. You are not her mother."
"You are not her mother either, Cher," Genevieve shot back.
"Do not speak to me in disrespect," the nun said.
"'Share is not a sign of disrespect,' Genevieve said, changing her tone so that she might charm the nun. "'It's French for dear.'
"'Then do not call me dear,' Mother Superior said.
Leaving Vivi's side, Genevieve stepped in closer to Mother Superior's desk. Teensy gave Vivi's hand a squeeze, then let it go as she stepped close to her maman. The light coming in through the window seemed extraordinarily bright to Vivi. From where she stood, she could see Genevieve's Packard parked outside near the curb. The car seemed like a car in a dream, and Vivi thought that at any moment it might shift shape into a boat or a bird.
"'If you continue to disregard my wishes, I will have to call Father O'Donoghue,' Mother Superior told Genevieve, as though the arrival of the priest were a deadly threat.
"'Call anybody you like, sister,' Genevieve said, taking Vivi's hand. "'But Vivi, she coming home with me.' "'Drop that child's hand,' Mother Superior commanded.
Ignoring the nun, Genevieve walked Vivi out of the office.
"'Let go of Joan,' the nun said, following them.
"'Her name isn't Joan,' Teensy said. "'Her name is Vivi.'
Genevieve led the girls down the long, dark hall. Vivi could hear Mother Superior's footsteps as she followed them. She could hear the rustling of the nun's gown. The footsteps sped up, and then the nun was upon them, her bone-dry hand reaching down to pry Vivi's hand away from Genevieve's. Vivi's fear was so strong she could taste it in the back of her throat, so strong it caused her to pee ever so slightly in the borrowed, boxy panties she wore. Genevieve flung Mother Superior's hand away. The nun stumbled backward, so that when Vivi looked at her, it seemed a wind had lifted her black veil and spread it out in all directions. The nun was no longer Mother Superior, but a shuffling black vulture.
"'I am responsible for saving this girl's soul,' the nun shouted. "'You'll be lucky if you can save your own,' Genevieve said. "'Now get out of here. Go on. Get!'
Genevieve put one arm around Vivi and one arm around her daughter, and the three of them walked fast, but did not run, out of the building. They walked down the stone steps and into the waiting Packard. Genevieve climbed behind the wheel, and Teensy shoved Vivi into the front seat and then climbed in herself. As the car sped out of the grounds of St. Augustine's, not one of them looked back. Still clutching Delia's feather pillow, Vivi thought she could detect the scents of oranges and pine needles and shrimp boiling in a big iron pot. She thought she could smell October in Louisiana during cotton harvest on crisp Friday nights. She thought she could smell life. She looked at the dress Teensy wore underneath her plum jacket,